Yeah, to everyone else, especially thanks to Veli, who really has been
doing the work.
Running the shiur, doing the work. It's a schus for the community to have a Talmidei Chacham like him involved with it. So, shkoyach to everyone, and thank you for the opportunity to be here and to share with you. And we have a lot of interesting questions today, and interesting questions, and we hopefully will be interesting answers too. Okay, some of them are a little bit run-of-the-mill, and some of them are very interesting. Okay, all right. Just a general note, we talk about business kashrus, right? There's something which we have to ask, like, you know, what about business? I mean, what's the difference whether it's business or it's home? If you look at these shilas, you can pretty much take all these shilas, and you can pretty much ask just a substitute. Okay, instead of coworker, just substitute the word family. You know, I'm sitting down eating this at the table, and someone else in the family sits down and does this. Okay, we're going to this restaurant, and the family is going here, and we have to go. You know, what's in the sense of everything? Pretty much, you have a microwave, and what do we do with the microwave? Okay, so pretty much the truth is, you have to ask the question: what's special, and what's, you know, is there in effect? Is there anything different? Really about business than about is anything about business than about just regular kashrus? What is kashrus? Seem to be much the same. So the truth is, in principle, there isn't much which is different. Okay, the fact that this business itself does not per se a heter to allow things that are not kosher. Well, you know, I need it for my work, so I can eat not kosher. Right? That itself is not a heter. Ella what? There are certain things that you're in your own house, so you're your own boss. You can, maybe the wife is, but all right, you decide what's going to come into the house, what you're going to buy, what you're not going to buy, how you set up the kitchen, okay, in America or England, probably all of us probably grew up with one sink, okay, one sink and one oven, and especially here, probably almost everyone probably has two sinks, and a number of people probably have two ovens. So you make up the rules, okay? You want to do this, you want to have this hashgach, you want to have this hashgach, you want to allow this, okay, you want to let your kids run around like that. You make up the rules, whether they can carry the food upstairs, downstairs, you run the show. When you're at work, though, you're basically under, you know, the facilities or whatever they have there, whatever sink they have, whatever oven or whatever microwave or whatever arrangements they have, whatever cafeteria they have, that's it. You have to work with what they have there. What they bring in, again, you're not in charge. Whatever is there is there. If you have to meet someone for a business lunch. So again, so sometimes you have, it's up to you, you can choose like anybody else. And sometimes basically, you know, this is where it is, okay? Now go figure out what you're gonna do. Okay, so in a certain sense, it's not so much that the business itself makes a major difference, okay, so much in the halakha. On the other hand, however, it sort of puts you in a situation that things that you normally wouldn't have at home, you're suddenly confronted, what do I do now? But as I said, these things can come up very much in the same kind of situation, and then it can come up at home as well in certain situations, or especially for the family, going to meet other families, or to have other relatives, you can have these same shadows. There is one issue which you're going to discuss, and that is to a certain extent, there are certain kulas that the Seer of Moshe talks about in terms of parnasa. There are certain leniencies, and we'll see in the context, interestingly, that in Sian, specifically about kashrus, but the issue of wearing kippah at work is where he discusses the extent, to what extent is there any sort of leniency in halacha when it comes to issues of parnasa, and that will have some ramifications on this. All right, so this is just as a way of overall introduction to the issue. We'll try to keep the focus to whatever we can on the business issue. And as I said, a lot of these issues can really be extended to full kashrus shiurim. Okay, maybe we'll finish down at the finish the series. Maybe there's room for have a series on some kashrus that certainly would be very appropriate for the community to have. Okay. The rule of thumb in all of this, rule of thumb, right, to avoid as many of these problems as possible, the rule of thumb is plan ahead. Okay? Certain situations are unavoidable, but many situations with proper planning, you can avoid many, many of these situations. Okay? For example, right, do you want to know if you can use the pot, can you use, do you want to make yourself coffee, can you use the glass at work, right? Again, what do you have to get involved in a shaila? What do you have to, can use the glass at work and not use the glass at work? Okay? One day, I remember, you go to the store, you get yourself another glass, and you bring it into work, you have your own glass. And the issue is whether the glass is tovel or the glass is not tovel, they use it, it's washed, it's smoked, it's smoked, it's placed. Right? You plan ahead, make yourself, or bring yourself a styrofoam cup, right? So again, there's room to answer. If you don't have, you have to ask the question, what will happen if, right? What happens if you don't have? What can you do? But certainly a person plans ahead and he can make sure that he has his own cup. Okay? Fine. He knows that a tzedes cup doesn't have the issues of whether he has to rely on the kashrus of the glass that they have at work. Okay? A person is a microwave. So it's so fine. So make sure that you have, we'll discuss shortly, make sure that you have what you need there to be able to use the microwave. After work, you have to run a microwave like this other thing. You have to go out for business lunches, right? Know your neighborhood. Okay? Know your neighborhood. Find out ahead of time what restaurants in your general vicinity, if you, I know you work in Herzliya, you work in Yerushalayim, you work in Ramat Gan, find out ahead of time restaurants where you would feel comfortable eating. And then if you ever have to business, say, fine, you know, I'm happy to meet you. They're also are good restaurants, you know, because it's lunch, you know, it's not like a fast food, you know. Right? Find yourself restaurants that meet your kosher standards and also your business standards, and have a list ahead of time. Have a list. It's very easy. You can poke on the web. They have all lists. There are lists in Hebrew, English, whatever you want. Okay? Plenty lists of all these kinds of places. Plan ahead. Know what you have. Know what to offer. Know what the options are. And then you avoid any problems. Someone wants to make a list. You know, I'd love to. It would be possible to meet at this restaurant. Okay? So you solve yourself the problem. Again, as I said, it will happen if it's told you, know, you're meeting him here. Okay? Or they're having a group, or you know, you're having a group and they decide that they're going here. Okay, we'll have to discuss what to do. But as much as possible, or if in this situation where they made arrangements at a restaurant which you may not necessarily have normally gone to, so again, you call them, you find out ahead of time. For that, the restaurants have mashgichim, for that, the communities have rabbanim. You call out ahead of time, you find out, I have to meet in such and such a place. What can I do in that restaurant? Right? Rather than waiting until you get there and suddenly, whoops, what do I do now? Find out about the restaurant ahead of time. And then you can decide, then you'll be able, you'll be in a position to know how to handle yourselves. This is the general rule of thumb in all these things. The more you plan ahead, the more you solve the issues of kashrus by properly planning ahead. I guess the rule in life in general, it's not just my kashrus, in general, whatever you plan ahead. But this is over here. Okay, all right, so let's take it one by one. Okay? All right, this is... In Chutz La'aretz, the question would just be, I'm going out to attend the restaurant meeting. All right, thank God in Eretz Yisrael. I can formulate the question on a business trip. It's to Chutz La'aretz, okay? It's just a trip to Chutz La'aretz, and I have to attend a meeting at a non-kosher restaurant. What can I eat? Okay, we're here in Eretz Yisrael, so I don't want to get too much into discussion about this, but we still have to. It comes up. I'm sure many of you have dealt with it. Right? What's important to mention there is that in Israel, it's usually most places are kosher. Okay? This kind of kashrus, that kind of kashrus, but there's a certain basic level of kashrus that you have throughout the country, and therefore there's an assumption you're different with different levels. Obviously, in Chutz La'aretz, you're often dealing with a situation of total non-kosher, and therefore you have to be much more careful from that respect. Okay? The rules of thumb here again are you want to avoid hot, because once you're dealing with hot, then you're dealing with, you have ingredients. And hot, because obviously you want to make sure the ingredients are kosher, and therefore you can't order something which is treif, right? You have to order something which is kosher, and therefore you can, again, each one, you know, as you're used to, whether in terms of you can get away with a Coke or something, or yogurt, or a fish, or a fresh food, or some sort of salad. Okay, depending on the situation, whatever you get. Many places you can order in from elsewhere. I was told that even certain restaurants, it's possible to order in from an adjacent restaurant which is kosher. Alright, so again, with planning ahead, what?
There's an issue of Maris Ayin. I'm sitting in a...
So this is a fascinating question. Is there an issue of Maris Ayin that people see you going into this Burger King? Okay, no. Alright, they see you walking on it. So choose Burger King. That's so good, because I'd be a business lunch in Burger King.
Your other issues. Right? You have other business issues.
So, that's a bit of a thing. In any it's accepted now that people have business lunches, and therefore, in any established restaurant which is with its reputation, It's known that people go in for business. It's an interesting question. It's one of the issues. Does it make more sense to try to meet the associate outside? I don't think it makes such a difference. But in general, the poskim nowadays, since it's very common to have these lunches, so the issue of maris ayin is not such a problem because it's common to have. It's assumed that, again, maybe England is a little different than America, in the sense of South Africa or Australia, where, you know, in America, it's known that Jewish people have business and go out to business lunches, and therefore it's
from
accepted
people?
From people, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
From
okay.
People.
In London, there's a company that delivers homeless meals to
restaurants.
Right. But if you restaurant, say we've delivered 10 this week already.
But if you went into a trade restaurant in London on a business meeting and some not from Jew had to walk in and they saw you sitting there with a kippah, don't you think they would think, huh, look, there's a guy with a kippah, he's eating in a trade restaurant?
I think you're assuming he's wearing a kippah.
No, in London, say if you had any connection with Judaism, that new guy would know that. Besides which, we'd probably be
sitting there. But that is a cellophane. You'd be sitting there with a plate about this wide. It's always something I've had a problem with, but, you know, it's always a question. And I always try and sit at the back of the restaurant or in a private dining room or something like that.
Okay. So if you can try to do, obviously if you can try to choose some place which is less out of, you know, not standing right by the door so everyone who walks in sees you there, obviously that would be preferable. So that's the issue of maris ayin nowadays. Again, this is an interesting question. How does it begin? The same question began in terms of air conditioners and Shabbos clocks. At the beginning, the poskim were not so happy about Shabbos clocks. All of a sudden, the house, everything starts whirring. This is going, that's going on, things going on. Right, maris ayin issues. Okay, once everyone knows that there are Shabbos clocks and that the lights go on, lights go off, air conditioners go on, air conditioners go off, so it's no longer maris ayin. Who is the one who jumped in, who started doing it, and have it going? Right, so it becomes a question. You know, who are the people who were the first people who went into the restaurants? Okay, what did they do? But at this point, anyway, we don't have this issue so much. It's not such a problem because of maris ayin.
You can keep the kippah on and eat
things that are, again, try to maybe should be things that are cold and kosher ingredients, or else, or as I said, ordering something in. Two things do have to be careful. Obviously, if you in terms of salads, obviously a whole, right, whole is better for a number of reasons. First of all, onions, you have to be careful. Onions are a big problem. Because onions, possibly, you know, lemons also, to whatever extent it comes up, we call davar charif. And davar charif has a very, very unique characteristic, is that the whole concept, one of the major concepts we have, is that of no sein tam lefgam. The idea is that something which is, we assume that vessels, containers, cups, spoons, pots, etc., can absorb of the flavor of the food when being cooked. After 24 hours, we assume the flavor is already stale. We call nosin tam lifugam, and therefore that will not trafe food. This is very important. Stam kacha, you should know in the kitchen. Okay, let's say for example, your wife cooked a nice fleishik or something. One of the kids came, took the mustard spoon, and boom, put it into the fleishik pot. Okay, or vice versa, or you did it. Okay, all right. So the point is, if it hasn't been used for hot within the last 24 hours, for the opposite, it doesn't trafe the food. That whatever it is, let's say the spoon has to be kasher now because it has milk and some flesh. But the food doesn't become treif. If I'm, as I said, when I'm cooked flesh, I cooked a cholent, and someone took a milk and a spoon that has not been used for hot within the last 24 hours, which is very likely, okay, and sticks into the cholent does not become treif. That is not a heter for business, it's a heter for the home. Right? Food, you have to continue to eat. Food, the spoon put aside, the spoon has to be kasher, but the food can be eaten. Davar charif, things like onions, okay. There we say that even something which is no sein tam lefgam, even something which is, even though you're not using it cold, and even though you're using it cold, but you're cutting it with a sharp knife, the knife and the davar charif, not only does the flavor come out, but it also gets rejuvenated. Right? The zets of the onion rejuvenates the flavor, and therefore if this knife which was used even a week ago, right, to cut some hot meat, is now used to cut the onion, even though the onion is cold, and the knife hasn't been used for tray for a week. Okay, the flavor will come out fresh into the onion, and this onion is mamish tray. Okay, so that you have to be very careful about. Absolutely, b'shum panim v'ofen, if it's not a kosher restaurant, right, you cannot use any onions. Again, if you know you have a knife just for the onion, they need a mashgiach for that. Right? If they have a mashgiach, they can be kosher too. Okay, So that's so onions you have to be very careful. Onions are the only thing you have to be careful of. As far as cutting other vegetables, so here I've seen different things in the Svarim. Some say that the question of to what extent is, maybe you can tell, you know, to what extent does a restaurant have special knives for salad, for slicing salad? Okay, and this is a Matthias question. Again, the halacha is going to be, if they use a knife which still has grease on it from something treif, and they cut the salad, so the salad now has treif grease on it. Okay, the halacha is simple here. To what extent you can rely that the knife is cleaned properly, or that they have a special knife for vegetables? Okay, it's I've seen different things in this farm. I guess it also may depend on the nature of the restaurant. I assume that a higher class restaurant probably has a separate knife for cutting the cucumber, and they don't use the same knife that's used to cut the meat to cut the cucumber. Okay, if it's a more Hamish operation, then maybe more of a problem.
But hygiene was required.
Hygiene is probably required that also. Okay,
but it affects the. You're concerned about the knife, but not about the bowl that the salad comes in.
I assume is washed. Okay, I assume the bowl.
The knife. You said that a knife that hasn't been used for a week.
Right.
Right. Can if you use it with onion, it rejuvenates the meaty aspect of the treif aspect.
Right.
Right. But doesn't the onion have the same effect on the bowl?
No, that's what I'm saying. Avoid onions. Don't order.
No, but wasn't there onions before?
Without onion in a bowl that has.
Okay, well,
it's pushed as well.
It's that. It's the combination of, we call the davar charif, and the pressure of the knife. If you just take an onion and you put an onion in a bowl, and it's just sitting in the bowl, that's not gonna. That will not make a difference. Only if you take a knife or something, and you're cutting, and you have pressure.
Smooth.
What?
But that's smooth.
The same thing again. If it's
not sharp,
if you manage to cut an onion with a spoon, then
I
don't know that.
Spoons that are serrated, kind of.
Okay, the same thing. Okay.
I think for me, if you say I want a salad but no onion, right?
Okay.
Now they go in there and making three salads.
Right.
And your salad is not going to have onion in it.
Okay.
But the same knife they're using to cut onion for the other two salads is then going to go and cut your cucumber and your tomatoes. Problem or
okay.
No problem?
Ooh.
In the same sequence,
really.
All right.
So again,
I don't get onion in my salad.
So again,
your salad is sitting there. And
so
just
this
take
is
onion.
Where.
There you don't.
Other way out.
They're making three salads, right? Your one's got no onion in it, but the knife is being used for everything, including onion.
So this will depend on where, and this is where I think an onion is more in terms of the onion itself becoming treif. I don't know how much there's grease. You know, when you cut something greasy, the knife has on it remaining residue from that. If you're slicing an onion, then you move over to slice your cucumber. If there will be residue of the onion on the knife, then it will be a problem. Okay, I don't know how much residue has remained on the knife. I don't know whether onion leaves, how much onion leaves residue on the knife. They'll come off on the cucumber. And I'm assuming that they're probably not going to take so much to cut from onion and go straight to a cucumber because they don't want onion flavor on the cucumber. Good. And so again, I don't know if that you have to worry that it was specifically used for an onion just before. Okay, it's really used for onion just before this. But in principle, if there were to be residue of onion when they cut your salad, it would be a problem.
But you can ask for a whole onion.
Okay, you can ask for a whole onion. You can ask for a whole onion. What you do, right?
What about the standard of checking lettuce leaves?
So this is another issue again, that lettuce leaves again become an issue, and therefore again, with leafy greens, it depends which country. In a certain sense, sometimes it's a little bit better, at least in the States, the bug control is somewhat better. But what you lose out is that here, because there's awareness and concern about the bugs, so they usually use, almost all places now have some form of Gush Katif, and the Mashgiach, one of the major jobs of the Mashgiach is to wash it. Obviously, if you're talking about a treif restaurant, they'll wash the lettuce, but no one's going to sit there washing it well. So again, this is also something that the leafy greens, the person should also try to to get a diced up lettuce salad, it's probably also not advisable because there's certainly not going to be any control over the leafy greens. Okay, so the two things. Okay.
You're down to Israeli standards.
Okay, yeah, down to the simple things. If you can, get what's good as a watermelon, you want to get yourself a watermelon. If it's summertime, get yourself some sort of watermelon thing. Okay.
In terms of like at a supermarket in America, you sometimes get counters for like just for fruits and stuff, where they cut the fruit, make a fruit salad, or and like they have in a place all different counters, but they're not like, they obviously
right.
have it. 99% sure they're using the same knife.
Right.
And
so
one
again, you don't have to go crazy to create problems that don't exist. But that's, you know, there is a concept in halacha that arzuke isura lo machzakina. We're not out to create problems. If we encounter a problem, we have to deal with it. But we don't have to assume that to create problems. You have a place which is cutting watermelon, and you assume that the knife that they cut watermelon, they're in the supermarket cutting 20 watermelons, that they have a knife that they slice the watermelon, chop, 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 chop. You assume it's 21. You have the counter there, and they have, and you see, you have to look what's happening. If you see that the knife is making its way from, you know, from the cheese to this to that to the other thing, and they're not careful washing it carefully, it's a problem. But if you see that the knife, they have a knife here, and they have a knife here, and the knife here seems to be here, I don't think you have to assume that the knife here is being used for other things. Okay, so this is in terms of chutzah. Okay, so that's for those who have to go back. And here, we don't have the problem so much. Again, just on a different level in terms of the Mahajan, not Mahajan, but most places here have at least some sort of level of kashrus. Okay? Fine. Number two. Someone to read? I read? Oh, go ahead. All right, I'm sitting at the office lunch and happily eating my bagel and cream cheese. What happened to the lax? I guess I should stop. Okay? A coworker sits down and joins me at the table. And Rav said, take at lunch a mouth-watering schnitzel and rice. Smells good. Can I eat at the same table? I need to move over. Okay? What do you say?
Is it kosher?
Is it kosher?
Is it
okay.
Chicken schnitzel?
Okay, so
if it's a pork schnitzel, then it does.
What?
Here's first many his.
Oh, he wants it. Okay. If he's a nice Sephardi, I'm sure he's going to share with you something. You know, taste it. You know, taste. My wife made this. You got to taste it. Okay. So what do you say? All right. So first, interesting. So first question, interesting. Ironically, if it's not kosher,
then you can eat
it's less of a problem. Ironically, what's the idea? The idea is, so much we have a similar concept by Pesach. That people know something is treif. Treif is a big red sign. Okay? People don't go near food, which is treif. We don't assume that just because you're sitting down eating lunch next to you someone eating treif, that you're gonna say, that looks good, and let me take a dip your bread in his treif sauce.
Is it okay? That you're going to eat his food, or that's just married to iron?
So the issue here is what is the issue here? So this is an issue here, which we'll see on source number one here. There is a gezeira of Chazal not to eat milchoks and fleishiks together because both are kosher. Both are kosher, and therefore you may end up eating simultaneously the milchoks and the fleishiks. Okay? They'll tell me maybe we should make a difference between chicken and meat. Okay? No, there's no difference. Both chicken and meat, you're not allowed to eat at the same table. That's what we have here in the Shulchan Aruch, source number one. Afilo, this is a siman, Shulchan Aruch has a special siman dedicated to this, the idea of not having meat and milk on the same table. Afilo basar chayav of asur alot al shulchan shulchan alot gvina shelo kevo lochlam yachad. Even if you have it's meat of chayav of, okay, the idea is that even though the reason they mention chayav of is that mid the oraisa, the isur of basar b'chav is only basar behema. Chicken and meat is an issa d'rabbanan, but nonetheless, it doesn't make a difference. They're not allowed to have it on the same table. Shema yavol ocham yachad. So, Shlomo, this is a particular question. Shema yavol ocham yachad. Okay.
And behemoth tamei'ah.
They are
not an issa at all.
However, but this issa doesn't apply to something which is not kosher, because something which is not kosher, you're able to, you know, to keep distance from. We have the same question when it comes to Pesach. Right? One of the reasons why we're so machmir on Pesach, we ask even b'kosher, one of the reasons given is that, or the reason we have bitum, or the reason we have to be mevatel, is that people, that we have to destroy the chametz, not just leave it around, is that people are used to chametz, and therefore, since they're used to eating all year, right, if it's left around, even a small amount of it, people may end up coming and eating it, and therefore Chacham went out of the way, where Chacham went over, you know, bent over backwards to completely get rid of it because we're used to it. And the same thing over here. Since this is kosher, so you're not allowed to have on the same table. Right, so that's, let's say, as far as in the house. Okay, if one person is having lunch, sometimes they have the cow kids, I don't know why, but at some age, when they all hit age 4, they don't like fleishchutz anymore in our house for lunch. Okay, there's a stage, they all love to because they want to be able to have milchiks for supper. Okay, so come age 4, every kid, one after the other, ugh, fleishchutz today, don't want fleishchutz. Okay, when they get older, they get out, go out of it. But age 4, for a period of 2 years, every kid decides they don't want fleishchutz. Okay, so let's assume one wants to eat fleishchutz, one wants to eat milchiks. Alright, so they can't. Right? What happens if it's people you don't know? You don't have such problems, I gather.
We're going to keep 3 hours.
Okay. But what's at work? It's not two people. You're sitting down, a co-worker comes. What's you and he? That's what it says here in Sifbet. This ish they're not putting on the same table. Dafka b'shnei adam hamakirim ze et ze, as long as they know each other, they're on friendly terms. Afilu heim makpidim ze al ze. As even if they're not going to share, okay, they're not going to share, they don't share, each one has his own stuff, and if one gives to the other, if one buys for the other, they'll charge, they're not going to just give to each other necessarily freely. However, as long as they know each other, even if they are not, they won't freely share, nonetheless, you are there, the Isser applies, and you're not allowed to sit at the same table. Aval achsanaim, she'en makim ze et ze, mutar. But if it's someone you're sitting down at a restaurant and someone who you have no connection with, perhaps sit down or a cafeteria, someone who you don't know sits down, that's not a problem because again, there's no concern that you will eat from each other's food. You don't know him b'chol, so he sits down, you sit down, you enjoy, he enjoys. Okay. Vafilo makirim. So what do you do? What do you do if your work is at? Do you have to move away? No, there's no need to move away. Vafilo makirim im asu shum heker. As long as you put up some sort of heker, something to demarcate, something to serve as a reminder. Kugon, shekol achad ochel al mapash shelo. If a person has a placemat, right? One of, even as Shulchan Aruch mentions both, you don't have to have both. As long as one of them will have, if one of them will put a tray underneath, again, if it's, let's say, a cafeteria where everyone eats on a tray, that's not a heker, because everyone's eating on a tray. Right? But if one is eating, if normally you don't necessarily eat on a tray, and you eat on a tray, and he doesn't eat on a tray, well, you'll put out a mat, or you put out a napkin that you normally would not eat on you, and you put a napkin on it, you put your plate on a napkin, so now you have some sort of heker, so that's enough that will serve as a reminder, I'm eating milchiks, and he's eating fleishchutz, and therefore, that's enough.
Does it have to be noticeable, but do you have to worry about his...
Does he? Do you have to worry that he?
Can you do it subtly? So
I think yes. I think it's enough. I think it would be enough. Let's put it this way. It would be enough. That would be enough for you. That would be enough for you. Okay. If he doesn't notice it, then you know, he has the problem because he's eating fleishchutz when someone has any milchiks. But as far as you're concerned, all right, even if it's done subtly and that's what it does, it can either be a something underneath, or you can put something in between. Okay, it can be something in between. Even interestingly, something which you're using at the meal, but would not normally be. Let's say, for example, I say a salt shaker might normally be sort of in the middle of the table, and if you take a salt shaker and you put your salt shaker over here at the very edge of the table, in between your plates. Okay, which is not a typical place for a salt shaker or something like that. So that could also serve as a heker.
The heker is enough, even if it's only for one person.
Words, again, that it's good enough for you. You're not really solving,
right.
You know, you're not really solving the other person's problem.
Right.
Okay.
You should be.
If it's someone that you can, you know, if it's someone that you feel comfortable, you know, telling, you know, or making it or doing something to make it clear, then adrabba, you know, let him know the halacha too, and let him. But if it's a situation where you don't want to get involved, it's not the. You don't want to get involved in this, and you just want to take care of yourself at the moment. So just put it. By the way, you should know the same issue comes up also in terms of within the family. It's not a unique halacha in kashrus in the business place. It comes up in terms of taras hamishpacha, the same thing, right? The husband and wife, when necessary, have to also can and eat if they're eating by themselves. Let people at the table are those who will make it. The question is whether you need or not. But if they're just eating by themselves at the table, right? So then they're also, the Tanishita Nida, so they also need a heker in between. And that heker can be any one of these things, either something underneath, either they have their own placemats, or one of them has a placemat, or they put something, you want to be romantic, you know, you can put a flower in, but you know, you can take a flower vase on the table, put it in between. Okay, so there you can do it again if you want to have heckam, other people are present, you don't have to take something so obtuse. You can, as I said, you can move over something which is like a salt shaker. There are ways, or take an extra cup, and there are ways of doing it that are not so obvious. As I said, those who make a b'chaf, other people at the table, if you want, there are ways of doing it in a way that are not blatant, and the same principles apply of having some sort of heckam. Okay. So this is an issue which is not, which is a relatively simple issue here, okay? During milchuk, someone else has fleishuk, you have to have either, you have to have some sort of heker, either, if he's out of arm's reach, then it's not a problem. You have a loan, like a table like here, I'm eating milchuk here, eating fleishuk there, we don't need any heker because I can't reach over and get to your food. But if we're within arm's reach, so then you have to have a heker, either by putting something underneath or putting something in between, simple enough, okay? Fine. Okay. Hello. Yes.
So say that the person doesn't really know about the heker issue.
Right.
Are they involved in mitzvah or like?
Again, they're doing. essentially, yes. This is an iser d'rabbanan. If they're not aware of it, presumably it's iser d'rabbanan b'shogeg. If it's someone who you would like, you know, someone who you can, who kashrus is important to him and you can educate him, so fine, should tell, you know, we shouldn't be eating milk and flesh on the same table. It's just something that depends on, it's not the food doesn't become treif. There's a gzera, chazal, said precaution. There is a precaution. A precaution, we're afraid that you'll eat together. Take a precaution that you don't end up eating from this. We don't want you to end up sharing from each other's food, and therefore take this precaution. Okay. So if he's a situation where he's not fulfilling the precaution because only you realize that you put something in between, okay, and he's not aware that there's any heker to him, it doesn't strike as a heker. Okay, so he's not taking the precaution. Okay. If you can educate him, so it's something we'll discuss later on. To whatever extent you can educate, better. Okay, number three. And again, this is not a unique work issue. Okay, the story of microwaves, right? How to deal with microwaves. There is a microwave at work, supposedly only for meat. However, people don't seem careful about it, and it may be used also for non-kosher meat and milk cakes. How can I eat? How can I use it? Okay. What? All right. Double wrap. Okay. Again, this is okay. So this is different. If you take a survey of what the instructions people got from the various rabbanim about it, microwaves. Everyone, different shades of what to do. Again, the basic idea in a nutshell. And again, some a little this way, some a little this way, some a little this way. All right. Microwave creates steam. Okay. Vapor can also transfer taste. If it gets hot, if the walls can get hot and you have a lot of vapor sitting in the walls, it will impart flavor into the walls. And if you then cook something else and you again create a lot of vapor and it goes, the walls become hot, it can come out of the walls and back into the vapor, back into the food. That's the basic issue which you're trying to avoid, and therefore the main thing you're trying to do is to cut down on the vapor. Again, this is also assuming that things are clean. Okay, if it's all very dirty, it's also a problem. And to put it directly on the same dish which is rotating, okay, it's again going to be a problem because that same dish may have on a milk as fresh. All right, so therefore, basically, you need to make a situation what?
It's glass.
It's glass, okay, it's glass, and therefore, for Sfardim, it's less of a problem. How many Ashkenazim, what's the ratio of Ashkenazim and Sfardim here? Okay, like 2 to 1?
2.
Okay. Okay, because there's the option to use. Okay, Sfardim here are more. Okay, here we have a cooler for Sfardim. Sfardim glass is not a problem for glass. That issue is less of a problem. Ashkenazim glass is also can become treif, and therefore, again, it's not such a problem. Just have a plate that you put down on the glass plate, and put your food on the plate, on the glass. Again, so prepare ahead, make sure you have at your plate. You can take a plastic plate, okay? Take a plastic plate that you keep at your desk. When you have it at the microwave, you put that on the glass plate.
Yeah, it's kosher.
Okay. Again, if you can kashrut, it'll be nice for the, right? But if you don't kashrut, so then what you do is basically you want to make sure that you have something underneath, so you don't have contact between your food and, hello, how are you, David? Okay, you want to make sure that you have something between your food and the bread, and you want to cut down on the steam. Therefore, you also have to cover it. Okay, you have to cover it to cut down on the steam. Okay, theoretically, if you have something which is completely sealed and the steam is not going to come out, that should be sufficient. However, all Rabbanim say, don't rely on that, because it can pop open, steam can still come out, and therefore stuff may, anyway, there may be some, it may end up falling, there may be drops. Therefore, what's always recommended is to have a double wrap, so that way, even if you just take a plastic bag, okay, put your microwave dish or whatever, or take two, or just take, if you have it off a microwave dish, just take two plastic bags, okay? And that way you have two layers, if even if something were to happen, the outer layer either ripped or something dropped. What?
You have to seal the plastic bags.
They should be closed, okay? I did see Malamed, was in contact with him, he made an interesting point that if steam keeps issuing out, we're not so concerned about it coming in. I haven't really seen that elsewhere. So the issue, so here what you have to do, you have to take a bag. First of all, it depends how long it's going for. If you're just heating up something for half a minute, okay, it's not going to be such an issue. If you're dealing with something that you're cooking for a longer time, it becomes an issue. Also, it depends. If it's in a microwave dish, the amount of steam which is going to come out of that is minimal. So the amount that's going to come out of that is minimal, so if you have a plastic bag, that should be able to contain the minimal steam that comes out. Otherwise, just take a bigger plastic bag. Obviously, if you have a bigger plastic bag, it has more room to expand. Don't take a plastic
bag. Which you have to zip close.
Either zip close or that you can just tie. You make a loose knot, right? You know,
How hard is it to cash a microwave?
It depends. It depends if it's dirty or it's clean. Okay. Depends if it's dirty or it's clean. There are those who say that you, again, this is a question that comes up in the house as well. Can you cash your microwaves between milkless and plates? But Poskim will say that you can, that you just that you clean it out, that you pass away 24 hours, and that you boil water inside. Other Poskim are not so happy about kashering back and forth, certainly if the place with work. But we may also have trade for milk and fleishuk, then it's harder to do, and you may not be able to sit there and kash every time you want to use it. It's much, much, much simpler to make sure it's just double wrapped, and then again, if you can be mizakh, that's seaborn kind of every night, you know, or every morning, kash, you know, start off a fresh day, you'll be mizakh, that's seaborn. Take a cup of boiling water with some soap in it, and then let it boil and steam, and make sure to wipe out the inside too. If you want mizakh, that's seaborn, tavo lacha bracha. If you're not able to do that, just make sure you have available, you have a microwave container, and you have some plastic bags. Again, have at your work a stash of plastic bags. Put your microwave container in a plastic bag, and you're okay.
It's happened to me a few times traveling. If a kosher menu you've got which comes double wrapped, the seal breaks.
Right. Okay.
Firstly, one seal breaks,
right,
leaving the bottom seal intact. Secondly, both seals break.
Right.
What's the
Right, so this is a tricky issue, and this is because the main reason we have double wrapping is because there is a concept that even though we talk about flavor going from food to into the pot or the spoon, whatever it is, we have the assumption that from one, if we have the two cups here, okay, things don't go from one vessel to the other unless there's a liquid medium. So therefore, if I have two layers of aluminum foil in the oven. Okay, so even if the rack itself can be trapped, but if you have two layers, it's not going to go from one layer of non-foodness, from food to a pot, from food to aluminum foil, from food to a rack, right? The flavor will go, but from one rack to another one, it's not going to go unless it's liquid medium. And therefore, the reason we have double wrapping is that this way, even if something were to fall, from tarfus were to fall on the outer wrapping. Okay, because the outer wrapping, you have two layers of foil, which is supposed to be dry in between. Okay, that's also an issue. And it's supposed to be dry in between, so therefore, even if tarfus were to fall in the outer wrapping, it has no way of going from the outer wrapping into the inner wrapping, and thereby into the food. But if you have only one wrapping, from the wrapping into the food. Right? So in a certain sense, it depends to a certain extent on how much it's torn, and has something necessarily spilled on it and how much steam there is. Okay, it's a little bit hard to give exact details, but that's what we're concerned about. It also depends if it's an oven or if a microwave, how much steam there is. If you're talking about a microwave, you're having more steam, then it may be more of, so if you're talking about an oven where you don't have so much steam, then you're more concerned about things spilling out of it. Then when you talk about the double layer, it's more for spilling. So if you see that there's only one layer, but it's clean, nothing spilled on it, okay, so it's not going to be a problem. If it's a microwave, there's a lot of steam, and therefore it could have all been steamed together, okay, it could be more of a problem if you have only one layer.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
I had a slightly different issue. A few weeks ago in Philadelphia, they opened everyone's mill, they heat them up so everyone's kosher mill would be hot.
Right.
And it seems I'm the only person who noticed that. Did I have an obligation to go tell everybody on the plane that they came to their kosher mill?
We'll come back to that. Okay, because it will come up on some issue. Okay, we'll come back to that. Okay, so these are issues, and that's in terms of you have to hope that the food shouldn't be open. But if it does, it depends if it's a microwave or not a microwave, and it's the issues which depend on how torn it is. Is it a very slight tear? Is it a big tear? How much steam could have come out? Okay, it's a little bit hard to give.
It's been in an oven.
What?
It's been in an oven, not a microwave.
If it's been in an oven, as I said, if it's been in an oven, and nothing has spilled. So if trafe has spilled on it, okay, then you have a problem. But if it looks clean, then it's okay. Okay. All right. Four. A secular Jewish colleague brings in a ba'al. This question will be very uplifting to our spirits.
It's an obvious answer. Okay.
A secular Jewish colleague brings in a ba'al scotch to make a l'chaim for the birth of his daughter. Can I drink this scotch?
No. Is it single malt or blend?
I would assume that he didn't sell his chametz on Pesach. Okay, it's just what?
Yeah.
What?
It depends on the quality of the whiskey.
Okay, alright. So here we have a very interesting question, and I'm sure everyone has a lot of thoughts to share, some l'chaims to share. Okay. What I found fascinating about this question is that Rav Moshe has three tshuvas on this, one after the other. Okay. And what's very, very beautiful about this is that this shaila, he has, I think, a very important introduction as to what Mahadra means. Right?
Segue.
Who, when, what, where. Right? In this tshuva, you have the answer to how to go about Mahadra. So this is what I say, have here, source number two. Okay, Bidvar blended yesh. Yesh is yayin saraf. It really should be yes, not yesh, but all right. Yayin saraf, right? Sharp wine. Er v'shchodesh adar sheni tof shin ches. Okay? Basically, just about before, just before the establishment of the State of Israel. Okay? Malas kvo yidi harav hagon afursa meyna harav pinchas tights shlita hagon avezdin Elizabeth. Okay? You ever heard of tights?
No.
Pinchas tights, he was Elizabeth, New Jersey. Okay? He was one of the major rabbanim of the time. At that time, the Jewish communities were beginning to be established, and Rav Pinchas Teitz in Elizabeth was one of the major rabbinic forces of the time. Apparently, he wanted to give a hashgacha to a certain whiskey. And he wrote to Rav Moshe, apparently asking for some sort of haskama for his hashgacha on the whiskey. Okay, that seems to be the question. So Rav Moshe responds to him, Kibalti mechtavah hayakar b'dvar hayesh blended shetachat hashkacha. Someone did his hashkacha, osim blended below tarovet yayin v'glycerin. What's the concern? The concern is that the whiskey may have some wine mixed in, possibly some glycerin mixed into the other brands, and he was going to give a hashkacha to whiskey which he knows has no wine mixed in, because what's the problem with wine? The problem with wine is going to deal with wine to get into stamienim yainesach, and the wine is either asked to drink or asked to bahanah bichlal, and therefore it gets mixed into the food, and you have major problems. He wanted to make sure, he'll make sure that it's just whiskey, no wine, no glycerin added, no additives, and that's the way that would be. And that way you know that this has special hashgach on this whiskey. So Vani Omer lo Yishakocha b'zeh Sheyeh roi lemahadrin lizar midvar. Right, it's a wonderful thing he's doing to allow those who want to be careful to be able to do so. Those who want to be the Mahadrin can be careful of this. Shetzarich hora'at chocham. The Mahadrin try to avoid things that involve them in shyness. Okay, what does he mean by this? Kehad chulin daf lamed zayin v'daf mem dalad v'ifsek baramas of sifkatan kuf tet zayin. Okay, what's the issue here? This is an issue with Gemara comes up in source number 3. There's a pasuk in Yechezkel. Yechezkel had to do many things which are meant to serve as examples for Am Yisrael when they're going out to Golus. He was told to lie on this side for 390 days, and then lie on this side for 40 days, and his wife was going to do all kinds of terrible things that he was supposed to undergo to serve as he lived at the time of the Korban, to serve as a model for Am Yisrael in the Golus, in the going to Golus in the Korban. One of them, he was told to prepare himself some food and basically bake it on cow's mess, and that was to sort of mimic the fact that obviously they're going to go to Golas and they're not going to have anything, they're going to be totally lacking everything, and they're going to have to live a life of poverty and in such dismal conditions. So he turns to Hashem and he says, "How can I do this?" And it's a pasuk in 3. Va'omar, aha, Hashem Elokim, hine nafshi lo mituma. Right? It says, how can I do this? So Gemara says, what did he mean by this? So he explains each way. He's trying to how he was so careful with kashrus. No big deal, shkoyach. I didn't eat treifos. Right? How can I do this? I kept kosher. No shkoyach. What's your chesed getting so excited? Of course you kept kosher. So he says, "Shelo achalti b'sar kuskus me'olam." Now there's a question: the Gemara, an animal who's on its last legs. Okay, so a farmer makes a very quick calculation. If he gives it another 5 minutes, it's going to be dead. It's dead. It's not kosher. He shechts it now. Right, it's still alive. He's got kosher meat. So the Gemara has a discussion about shechting an animal who's mamish on its last legs. Right, animal's already very aged or sick, whatever. Not a treifa. Treifa is usually some specific organic problem. It has a hole here, a hole there, something on the lungs. But an animal which is just
old age,
okay. An animal is just sick and dying, but no particular pathology, okay. So such an animal, so if you shecht, it's kosher. So the Gemara has a whole discussion: what happens if you catch it, mamas, at the last minutes? Right? Are you afraid that before you started cutting, because the shechita is when you cut through the half, and when you do the majority of the 2 simanim. So we have to be afraid that as you started cutting, before you hit the 2 halves, before you hit the majority, the animal expired. So the Gemara has a discussion about that, and the Gemara explains that the hidur of Yechezkel was that he would never eat meat which was kos means to shecht. But this person is like, shecht, he tells the shochet, now, go quickly, come run to the shechita. He would not avoid anything which was getting him into these kind of, almost, he would avoid. Pigul. Obviously, he can't pigul zisr. Umar explains that what Yechezkel did, anytime it was a shayla, he wouldn't eat it. Even if the rav would paskin that it's mutter, but since it was a shayla, so he would eat his machmir, because it's possible someone can make a mistake. Especially if it's the kind of, it also depends what kind of shahs. Certain shahs are open shah. What's the halach in this situation? Okay, it's halach, it's a little bit less of an issue. But if it's something, you know, those who had tzanani shchita, you know, it had this in the lung, what is this? Is it this? Is it this? Right? Is this whole this? Is it cut in the jar? There are certain issues which are judgment call. Okay, judgment call, a person can make a mistake. So therefore, even if the Rav Paskin that it's mutter, but Yechezkel was saying that he was extra machmir and he wouldn't eat anything that had shaylos. So the Gemara derives from this that there is an inyan of being careful, even things that me'ikar hadin are permissible, even things that there was a shayla asked and the psak came back that it's kosher. But a person who's extra careful won't get involved in these kinds of shaylos. And that's what the Gemara mentions. That's a quote here on page 2. Right, where this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about it. We're not going to read it in Sarif, the issue of time, But it talks about again in Mesukenesh. It says Hamadaktikim Amachmir not to eat it. And the Ramad then adds a second issue, that's an animal that a chacham paskan on misvara, it's not explicit din. Again, Baal Nefesh Lo Yocham Imeh. So this is the basis, these Gemaras about the Mesukenes and about the Horeb HaChacham, this is really in a certain sense the basis for Mahadrin. Not to, because there are all kinds of kashrus, there are many machlokasim. Alright, so when you talk about regular kashrus versus Mahadrin, one of the major differences is how you deal with these questions. Alright, something, again, if the majority of Poskim say it's Aser, okay, so it's Aser, it's Aser. Alright. But if there has been a significant number of poskim who say it's allowed, but there are those who argue, right, as most other things in halacha, they're machlokasim. So therefore, a regular kashrus will say, okay, there are enough poskim to allow and say it's mutter, and therefore we will allow it. Whereas mahadrin will say, since it's a shaila, okay, and it's a machlokas, we're going to not allow. We're going to be machmir for the other poskim. And this is the idea that's here, it's Rav Moshe here, it's a question here, there's a possibility of wine being mixed in. How do you deal with the possibility of wine being mixed in? And as we see Rav Moshe, right? But, so Rav Moshe, we'll see, has a whole discussion where he holds that Meikar Hadin, it's not a problem, but he says, still, it's a shaila. And there are in fact those who argue. And therefore, for Mahadrin, okay, you can't call something where there's a shaila, as Mahajan, someone wants to be careful. It's nice to have a scotch, to have whiskey that you know is free of shilas. Okay? Now listen to the next line. Va'afani, fascinating line. Va'afani shani matir. Rav Moshe holds that it's mutter, even he has a chashim, but the basic gist, and that's the major, major machos in the humor of tights, is there is a concept, at least by water, it comes up for in terms of wine for Kiddush. If you mix in wine and it's less than a sixth, right, you have five parts water and you have only one is less than a sixth, it loses its status as wine, and therefore it would even become shah. It wouldn't be where Pia Geffen anymore because it's too dilute. Rav Moshe understands
that.
What? Now we are even more machim because our wines are weaker. So we don't allow it. Right, so we require a greater percentage of wine now, right. But in the times of the Gemara talks about a sixth. So Moshe derives from this that wine which is more dilute than a sixth is not loses its status as wine, and it's just considered as some sort of, use the word kuha, some sort of sharp flavoring, but sharpness, but it's not really considered wine. And therefore, Rav Moshe claims that if the wine is less than a sixth, even if it's not a sixtieth, if it's less than a sixtieth, we assume things in general are batel. But if it's between a 60th, the issue is possibly a 40th, if it's less than a 6th, if Moshe holds it doesn't have the status of wine, and therefore it's not going to aser. Wine less than a 6th won't aser other drinks, and this was the major machlokes. So if Moshe writes, v'afshani matir, even though I hold that it's mutter, right? He passes that it's mutter. Nizhar ani ba'atzmi, milishtod blended, I am careful not to drink it because, although I hold that it's mutter, nonetheless, there's a shaila about it, and therefore I don't do it. Rach, but yet he writes about himself, bechabura, if I'm sitting around, and there's a whole group of people, and everyone's making a l'chaim, shelo lemechze kiyora, and everyone's going to drink, and I'm with a bottle, not for me. So he's not going to drink. Everyone's drinking, and he's going to sit there not drinking. It's going to look like he's being Yuara, so I guess what Moshe's entitled, but Moshe's anivus. I didn't want to stand out. Hayiti shoteh, so he would drink, but interesting, what does he say? Mashuhu, so he doesn't say, well, once I can drink, let me finish the cup. Hayiti mashuhu, levarech ha-masubim kanuhu. So if Moshe had the sensitivity, right, if it's not mutter, there's nothing to discuss. But he held it was mutter. Ella what? He's machmir. He's Mahadra. On the other hand, you don't want your Hidur to make you stand out and look like Yuhara, and therefore he would drink with others if it would be blatant. But he tried to minimize as much as possible and just drink the minimum necessary to be Yotzezayin.
So when you
and therefore, if you can make whiskey which can have no shilas, oh, you're doing a terrific thing. But just another thing, okay? Avaladina! But even though you're doing a wonderful thing and it gives me a shekayach, and it's good to have hashgacha, but הדין היה שבלנדר שיש חשש שמערבים בחלק אחד מערבים יין, מותר בשתייה. זה לא קרה בהופר את התשובה. ולכן חזינן, שלא חששו כל הרבנים שבמדינה לעשור זה. מסתכל עוד רבנים דינת עשרת, וגם כמעט כל ישראל שמדינות אלה שתו זה, וחס ושום לא משעשו ישראל כדביעתי שמדינה מותה ומאין הנביאים בני נביאים הם. רבו שלו, this idea of מנהג ישראל, if we find all שומרי מצוות, are doing something, you can't just say that all these Shomer Mitzvahs are doing wrong, and there has to be a basis for it, right? Even if it's, they may not know the reason, but there has to be some sort of basis, and therefore Moshe explains why it's mutter, although himself, I personally try to avoid it, unless I need to, then I do a little bit to be Oitzizai. Yeah.
Okay, so does this also, can this also be applied to the, to food? That you have something, you know, if you're making a simcha, and you know that you know, maybe one or two people would prefer to eat a certain heksher, but everyone else is happy with a with a regular heksher.
Mm-hmm.
Should this not apply
okay.
as well?
So it depends. Again, so it depends where. It depends from which angle you're asking the question. Okay, Rav Moshe was the guest. He's not making up the menu. Okay, he's in a situation where this is what's being served. That's in the question we have here. The person brought in the scotch, that's it. Either you drink or you don't drink.
But as the guest going to a simcha.
If you are the host, so then you have to make a cheshbon, you know, how much do you want to go out of your way to make these individuals feel comfortable? It also depends, is this an official communal issue or is this your own private? If you're making your own private thing, so then again, so other people come. So yeah, then it's your own call. How much, you know, how much else is it going to cost you and how much do you have a responsibility to go out of your way in order to make these other people feel comfortable. If it's a community show, it's a different cheshbon, right? Because if it's something for the community, then you have to be able to, right? Let's say, for example, I remember Rav Schechter, he had a shiur once about building mikvahs. The title of the shiur was, why does it cost $1 million to build a mikvah? That was the title of the shiur. And basically he showed that if you want to build a very simple mikvah, that will be a kashir, mi'ikar hadin, you could do it for $100,000. However, right? Since it's, we're machmir for this chum, and we're machmir for this chum, and machmir for this chum, and machmir for this chum, and machmir for this chum, why are we machmir for every chum under the sun? Since it's an issue of a basic issue, something which is basic and has to serve, mikveh has to serve the entire community. Again, you're having a mikveh, you want to eat, you want to eat, you want to eat, don't eat, right? But you have a mikveh must serve the entire community. And if it's going to serve the entire community and it's something essential, one of the, you know, essential aspect of Jewish life, then you have to make sure it be acceptable to all. And therefore, we go out of our way to be choshes for almost every chumrah that's possible. And that's why it costs $1 million to make to create a mikvah. So again, this is the same issue. If you're making a lunch, okay. So then you have to if you're having a private party, so you have to decide how much does it cost you and how much you have to wait, how many guests are there. There's always an issue a person's making a wedding. We have the issue we have people in the yeshiva. The same issue. You know, they want to make it a certain way. You know, the family is from the home, this isn't enough, but they want to have people from the yeshiva. And sometimes what they'll do is in some places they'll order especially people, for, you know, they'll order, you know, they can order for those people they can get. But again, this is, right. If it's a community issue, again, that's a different cheshbon that's taken into account to, you know, you don't want to formally do something which will necessarily cut out people. Again, you have to make a cheshbon. Yeah, you have to also see how many people it is and what the cost.
What about a more general question in terms of eating other people's houses?
Let's go into a little bit more. Okay. So again, Rav Moshe then continues. Again, this is Meikar Adin, but again, this idea of a Baal Nefesh, Yesh Lachmir Atzmo Mitzlekama Chashashot, because there are a number of problems there, for Baal Nefesh should be careful. And therefore, again, he gives him a Shikoyah. But he says, I have a suspicion, as my own guess, okay, that Rav Teitz probably wanted Moshe to come out with some sort of decoration, like only buy Rav Teitz of scotch. I'm assuming that was the idea. And Moshe said, I'm not. You know, that's what I suspect is going on underneath, because there are three shadows. He wrote something, he wrote his tshuva, Rav Teitz answered it back. Moshe wrote a second response, wrote another response, Rav Teitz wrote it back, Moshe wrote a third tshuva. Okay, so I have a suspicion that was going on. So Moshe gives him a shukayah, that's terrific, it allows people to be careful. On the other hand, he felt the Ikar Hadin, we have to know what the Ikar Hadin is. Okay, and although Baal Nefesh should be Machmir, himself is Machmir, but we have to know there are certain times, there is a time and a place to be Machmir. And if it's an issue of Mechzei Kiyuara, then a person, right? Well, and there is a basis. Again, if it's not kosher, I don't care how it looks. If it's not kosher, it's not kosher. But if it's kosher me'ikar hadin, and it's a chumra, so fine. So bal nefesh can be makom, can be mahadeh, but he has to know to put it into perspective that it shouldn't be a situation which is going to stand out overly. And the Shachan coin is also an issue that shouldn't cause an unnecessary hefsay to other people. It talks about this issue of the animal, which is whether it was a shayla battle, it's an animal, or it's a mesukenes. I say, if it's a goyish animal, so you'd want to call it, say, you want to be machmir atid, that's a goy's loss. But if it's a Jew, the Jewish farmer has his animal, right? You're going to not be machmir, I'm not going to eat this. It's going to be a tremendous hefsay to the farmer. Okay, like nowadays, you have a lot of people, one of the new issues coming in now. Like this issue of chametz not relying on mechiras chametz, only eating stuff that was made after Pesach. Right? So you have your local makolet, which sold the stuff, and you're going to be machman, I'm only going to buy in the stores that, that were nefel achar Pesach, and therefore the stuff in the local makolet I'm not going to buy anymore because I want to be machmir only to have stuff which was baked after Pesach. So that's a chumrah, which is, again, it's a chumrah. Right, quotes at the expense of the local makor. So the question is how much that kind of humra is necessarily in place. Okay, just to wrap, I'm poked down a little bit in terms of the on the net in terms of the issue of the whiskey. The Afghans and the Australians had the most succinct summary of the. You can read it to yourselves. Mention it'd be interesting. There's the issue of Irish whiskey, which may contain wine. Okay, and therefore they require. Apparently, they didn't want to rely on the nuts. I've been relying on Rav Moshe about as far as the wine, and therefore they say that Irish whiskey, which can have wine, should have a hechsher. I saw on the Star K. The Star K has the most comprehensive article about it. If you can, again, you can search for Google, and you can. The Starke has the most extensive article on it, and they also have a list of all kinds, a long list of whiskeys and beers, and the Chicago Rabbinic Council also has. Okay, London probably. What?
They've changed the view on certain Irish whiskeys now.
As far as what?
So when they wrote this in 2008, they were very concerned about Irish whiskeys, and they said Jameson's and others were not kosher stuff. Which is this reference here. Apparently now they've rechecked them and.
And it is okay. Because in the Star K they didn't make such a fuss about the Irish whiskey.
This
right.
Caused an unbelievable
right.
Break.
Okay. All right.
London
so
throw all Irish
whiskey
away.
Right. Right. Okay. So this is the okay. So the basic issue is basically the going that there's usually things are not added, and therefore the different kinds of the. Now the other issue about the whiskey, one issue is the possibility of wine. The other issue, and that's become more recent issue, are the sherry, other casks in which the thing is made. So some have sherry wine, which gets into a question of we spoke about they don't have actual wine, but you have the flavor of the wine coming in from the barrels. Okay, so again, this is a question: whether what's the purpose? Is it trying to give it a flavor? Is it just the color? Okay, they raise in the number four possibility of now sometimes it seems they have to put it in for they are trying to get the flavor in. So this is an issue again. They're right here in number three that wine has a subject to deal consideration, right? And the quote the Makasiyska of Moshe, who did not forbid the consumption, okay? And the number four, whether you now have the extra put in a second time, may not be covered, and according to some may wish to avoid products of labor. Okay, so this is basically the issue. All right, so again, you have a question going back to what we said before. If you're going out to buy yourself a scotch, okay? If you're going out to buy yourself a scotch, why get involved in something which has a shadow?
Better scotch.
It's that, there's a list this long, okay, of scotches. I don't drink wine. I don't drink scotch at all. So I don't drink alcohol. I have a wine I drink, but for kiddish. I don't drink scotch at all. So I'm not a maven on this. But there's a list this long of scotches. I find it hard to believe that the one particular scotch tastes that significantly. Right?
Well, I think it's a matter of opinion. No, flip side. No, someone comes in from duty free. They come in, they buy you a present, and they buy you the scotch that comes from Cherry Cask.
Okay, so again,
I hear what you're saying, but like, let's say it's a present. You know.
Okay, again, so that's it. This, so again, Rav Moshe. Moshe was makel even. Rav Moshe was makel even on the wine itself. And these sherry casks are not, it's even a less of an issue, okay? Many Rabbonim allow it. As I said, in the Star K, as far as they recommend the list, they don't recommend. Those that have the sherry casks, they don't recommend. Okay? Okay, that's it. The London Basin continues to all types of Scotch whiskey, Basin and Chuzer, because Moshe does the Kosher authority. Okay, so they continue. They're basically looking for, as I said, Moshe even allowed the wine itself,
right.
Certainly if you just didn't like the surrogate. So again, certainly there's what to rely upon, and certainly if someone brings in something.
What about the selling of chametz?
What about the selling of chametz? Here becomes an interesting issue. What about the selling of chametz? Right. So again, here the halacha itself. The halakha itself is very clear. This is basically scotch as chametz gomer. It's just made from malt or grain, okay? And therefore, it's chametz gomer, it has to be sold, and if it's not sold, it becomes asur. Okay? Ela what? So now your question is, what are the, you know, you have a situation. If you know for a fact that it was before Pesach, you can't drink it. Manasseh, it's asur. Okay? And as I saw, the whole issue. Mahadrin is an issue, right? And kulas is where it's mutter me'ikar hadin. You have a chumra. Chumras is a place to be mach and a place not to be mach. But something which is aser, even if it's isur derabbanan, it's aser. So if you know for a fact that this was in it, that this was his before Pesach, and he didn't sell his chametz, there's nothing you can do. Obviously, you don't have to. You don't want to necessarily, throw it in his face. Depending on the, certainly if he's not religious, if you can weasel out of it in a way which of their cherets, no, thank you, or you'll drink and pretend that just pick it up and put it down. Right, if you can get away with that, get away with that. But there's no have to hear if you know for a fact. However, if and here again, you can see issues. Since the issue of mechiras chametz is the chametz shavla v'pesach, it's an issur d'rabbanan. It's a knas that chachamim made for people who they want. People shouldn't leave the chametz, right? Chachamim made a knas. You left it with Pesach. Don't try to leave it with Pesach because we're not going to let you use it. So if it's a knas, so it's issur d'rabbanan. Issur d'rabbanan. So we have a rule: safek d'rabbanan l'kula. Okay. So the question: what do you give safek? How much? So if there's a reasonable chance, either that he bought it after Pesach. Even if he came in a week after Pesach, who says it was that? Especially if the daughter was just born now. Right? So if there's a reasonable chance that the bottle was just born on the occasion of the birth, okay, he may have gone out yesterday and bought it. Okay, if there's a reasonable possibility of that, or if there's, many Jews, even if they're not necessarily religious, not Shomer Shavuot, but they are careful about chametz, and therefore there's a possibility that he may have sold the chametz. So if there's a reasonable possibility, either that he sold the chametz or that he bought the bottle fresh. So again, you don't have there's room to be mekel since we're dealing here with a knas derabanan, and there's an element here of a reasonable suffix, and therefore you would be allowed to drink it. Okay, again, it may be recommended that, like of Rav Moshe, you don't have to finish till the last drop in such a situation. It depends on the person. Again, these are things that I can't tell you. You have to know the person. If it's a very small chance, then be more careful. If it's a reasonable chance, he's a kind of like a Masorati person, and I'm sure he sold the chametz, but there's a reasonable possibility. And it would be allowed. Then they say, so, yeah.
So if it's a half full bottle.
If it's a half full bottle, so then you have, then again, that's more problematic. Then presumably it was from before, and he's the kind of person who you think, right, that you think is very likely, is not, sufficiently removed that he doesn't tell a chametz. Then you have to find some way of excusing yourself. Right. Okay. Okay. All right. 5 and 6 left. What do you want to do? Your call. 10:30. What? 5 minutes. Okay. So wrap up. All right. 5. Is there a rationale? Sorry, that wasn't. Is there any rationale to lower one's conscious stand to be able to eat with his coworkers? Could somebody tell me, Mahajan, eat plain rabbanut for work reasons? Okay, so again, this goes to ties in to what we were discussing before. Right? The work itself, is not so much of a heter. However, if you work with other people, the idea of Moshe spoke about, the idea of yuhara, comes into play. The idea of the question of to what extent will other people be insulted by what you're doing? Okay, if it's there is a concept of yuhara where it seems that the kind of yuhara means gava. Yuhara is Aramaic for gava. If you're acting in a way which is noticeably sort of putting you aloof and above everybody else, okay, so a person has to be careful not to refer that guy that, you know, kashus on, hakpad on kashus is one thing, but hakpad on midos is also something. Okay, and therefore to be machmer and kashus and to make yourself look like a baal gava, is not so difficult. The Gemara says there's certain things that chumas that may be very nice things to do, okay, but if it comes at the cost of looking like you are superior to everybody else, so therefore there are times that we recommend that you not do things to look like you're better than everyone else. That's what Moshe was talking about. You have a situation where all the other Rabbanim are sitting around and drinking.